This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. If you walk near the lake at night, there is a good chance you'll see bats swooping through the air to feast on insects. What you might not see or hear is the aerial warfare at play, dividing the weak and the strong in a battle for survival that has spanned millions of years.
Tomorrow morning, Dr. Nicholas Dowdy will give a lecture on the evolutionary arms race between bats and tiger moths. It's the first of a series, Lunch and Lecture Presentations, hosted by the Milwaukee Public Museum. Dr. Dowdy joins us now in studio. Nick, thanks so much for being here.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, first of all, just to start here, what are tiger moths? How do they differ from, like, what I would consider a normal moth?
Well, tiger moths are an extremely diverse subfamily of moths. There are 11,000 species worldwide, and they're medium-sized to large moths, although some of them actually are very small, too, so they kind of span the moth size range, I guess. And visually, most of them are actually very colorful, so you might think of them more as, like, you know, quote-unquote butterflies. But, you know, butterflies and moths are actually both in the same group. They're both Lepidoptera. They're just separated mainly by whether they're active during the day or night in their evolutionary history. The other key thing about tiger moths is that they actually have the ability to produce sound in response to bat echolocation, and sometimes also in courtship. And that is pretty unique among moths.
So moths don't normally make sound.
So we're sort of still learning a lot about that. We do know that tiger moths do that, but we're sort of finding out more and more that other moths are doing that too. But the majority of moths out there, no, they're not producing sound that we know of right now. But the majority of moths actually do hear sound. Which is really interesting.
So for tens of millions of years, tiger moths have been in competition in some ways with bats. You call it, in fact, intense selective pressure from bats. What do you mean by that?
Well, bats are very hungry, and they're very good at hunting insects. In my talk, I'm going to give some figures, but, I mean, basically, they eat a tremendous amount of insects. They, some people have estimated that they provide the United States alone about maybe $30 billion in biocontrol of pest insects, which is huge. And their ability to eat so many insects per night, I mean, that is the driver of evolution and natural selection. It's differential survivability. Do you survive or do you not survive? Can you live through a bat attack or not? And it's where that's where these anti-bat defenses really come into play. They help the moths survive that intense predatory selective pressure from the bats.
Are bats in particular attracted to tiger moths? Is there anything unique about them that would make them particularly delicious?
No, actually, there's a lot of things that make tiger moths particularly not delicious. I didn't mention this before, but another unique thing about tiger moths is that many of them, what we call sequester, or they basically take chemicals from plants to use in their own defense against bats. So as caterpillars, or sometimes even as adults, they will go to toxic plants and they will feed on them. And normally, toxic plants, they have these compounds to stop insects from feeding on them because they are very harmful to most insects. But tiger moths have special biochemical adaptations which allow them to not only overcome those plant defenses but also take those defenses for themselves and use them against their bat predators or even their invertebrate predators or bird predators too.
So this is one of the defenses they've built up over millions of years.
About 50 million years, yeah.
About 50 million years. And really what your lecture is about is all the different kinds of defenses they've developed. What are some of the other things they use to fend off bats?
So the key one is hearing. You've got to be able to hear the predator coming in order to do something about it. The second one is sound production. So once you know that the predator is coming, what are you going to do about it? In addition to sound production, what most other moths do is actually evasion. So this was something studied, first studied in about the early 1960s by a neuroethologist, which is basically just somebody who studies the neuronal basis of behavior. And they found that moths have two major evasive maneuvers. One is he called a turn-away behavior, which is sort of like if the bat is far away, you turn around and you fly in the opposite direction. Very straightforward, easy to understand. The other one is much more interesting and fun to study, and it's called evasive dives. So these are like when the bat is very close to the moth about to make a capture, the moth will do these crazy spiraling dives, and this allows the moth to make sort of a quick escape at the last second to get away from the bat. So there's been a lot of studies recently taking some new technologies like 3D videography and stuff and measuring flight performance of insects doing these dives and how effective the dives are versus when the insects are not doing dives, when they basically you take away their ability to hear the predator coming, and you can compare their performance with hearing and dives and without hearing and without dives. So that's really, really neat. Other sort of non-acoustic defenses exist as well, and I will talk about some of those. So recent studies have shown that Luna moths may be able to use those long tails that they have coming off of their hind wings as a diversion against bat attacks. So as the bat is coming in to attack the moth, instead of attacking the body of the moth, they may attack the tail instead. And I believe they found that with tails intact in their experiments, the moth survived about 60% of the time, which was great. Without their tails, they were captured like 80% of the time. So huge effect, it seems. Some other non-acoustic defenses. This one I'm really interested in, and that is like acoustic stealth sort of technology, which is really pretty crazy. So some researchers studied – this is actually another tiger moth. But instead of their sound production, they actually looked at the body covering of the moth. So moths are – pretty much all moths are covered in what we call scales. And they're sort of like little tiny pieces of exoskeleton shingled, kind of like on the roof of your house, maybe the shingles on your house. But in those shingles, they looked at the microstructure of those, and they found that they had this – really interesting sort of lattice structure. And they did some experiments and found that relative to a butterfly, which shouldn't be under any selective pressure from bats really, those particular types of scales absorbed bat ultrasound by 5 to 6%. So that decreased sort of the distance by which the bats could detect them by about 5 or 6%. So it's sort of like a like a B-2 stealth bomber, trying to hide from radar. It's the same idea, but it's in moth scales.
I'm talking to Dr. Nick Dowdy. He is currently working at the Milwaukee Public Museum, and he's about to give a lecture on moths, specifically tiger moths, and how they defend against bats. And so we have mostly insectivore bats around here. Do we have different types of tiger moths?
Oh, yeah. In Wisconsin, I don't know the exact number of species here. I mean, it's certainly not the most diverse place in terms of tiger moth diversity. You really have to go south to get that. But even in Wisconsin, I would say we have at least probably 10 to 12 species, which is pretty good. And a lot of those are producing sound in response to bat echolocation. There's actually also a surprising number of bat species in Wisconsin. I believe there's about like 11 or 12 of those too. So it's actually a really great place to be to study bat-moth interactions.
Is this something that people could see if they walked out to, say, the lake in a bat box, per se?
Yes, you could. You would need some special equipment, nothing too crazy. So you'd need like a flashlight or a headlamp to be able to see what was going on. It would be a lot easier to see the bats flying around and doing their thing. The moths are kind of small, and you need a trained eye to sort of see like, oh, yeah, that's this moth. It's hard to do at night when they're flying around. You can get there. I'm there, but it takes years to get there. Now, if you want to hear what's going on, So most of this is in ultrasound. So ultrasound means sound that is not audible to humans, which is above 20,000 hertz. That's the pitch is above there. There are things that you can buy to help you hear those things. We call those bat detectors. It's basically like a small box with a microphone and a speaker on it. And that microphone picks up the ultrasound and sort of slows it down and converts it to things humans can hear. And you'll hear little chirps and buzzes and things that the bats are making. So that's a lot of fun to check out.
All right. Well, Nick Dowdy, thank you so much for joining us here on Lake Effect. And we look forward to the lecture.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to seeing you there.
Dr. Nick Dowdy is a postdoctoral research fellow working at the Milwaukee Public Museum. You can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at wuwm.com.